Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 378 of the podcast with my delightful guest, Amy Dellen. I am so pleased that we were able to make this conversation happen. I know you're going to love it. And I'm going to give a shout out to PJ, but you're also going to get a shout out in the episode. So I'm not going to overdo it. But that is a longtime listener and buddy who suggested this matchup happen, and we couldn't have been more delighted by it. So thanks. I hope everyone is still doing all right, taking care, staying sane, and I send you lots of love from the place I'm sitting. How are you? How's being inside going?
I'm good, all things considered. What about you?
That's the answer, right? That's sort of the best answer. There's no, like, it's totally inappropriate to be like, oh, the worst, awful. Like, I'm healthy, but I'm a mess, which is also probably true for many of us at any given time, or, you know, every other hour we feel awful. But also being like, oh, I'm so good. Oh, I'm never better. Like, that's also a horrible, that feels wrong. It's interesting how quickly, the pat question of how are you and the response of, oh, good, how are you? Like, just mm-hmm. it just turns 45 degrees for everyone. Like, the same new answer that's sort of like, yeah, we'll talk about this more in real detail, so this is just the pleasantries. The new normal is like, I mean, I'm fine. I'm okay. I'm good under the circumstances, right?
But I think that's weirdly, it's a good reflection of the fact that those openings, we endlessly make fun of that kind of small talk thing, but technically they're doing some sort of vague averaging together of circumstances anyway. That response was always a more or less, without getting into details, is it a crisis right now? And people being like, you know, more or less not. So now we're all just sort of re-averaging together and trying to figure out, like, all right, if I've gone too under the baseline today, does it indicate that this is an exceptional day? Or is it inappropriate not to acknowledge in my opening that these are exceptional times? I don't know. It's a weird calculus.
That's right. There's an X and Y axis. I know that for sure. I don't necessarily know what either of them say, but I agree that there's a graph and it can be tracked. It's definitely can be tracked on a graph. What are you? I have prepared absolutely nothing for this conversation, per usual. So please know that I'm not looking at like a checkoff list, but an Anton checkoff list. I've never made that joke before. I never will again. But listen, strange times call for strange playwright puns.
Oh my gosh!
Is there anything that you are surprised? And I say this again with zero answer on my side either, mm-hmm. but like, is there anything that you find yourself surprised to discover about yourself just under these circumstances? Like, because they're so new, is there anything that you're like, huh, I guess I never thought I would be a bread baker or whatever, which I only recently, I'm so tapped out on knowing what other people are doing, like in a general sense rather than just on a one-to-one sense. I did not know until like 2 days ago that I guess baking bread is like the thing everyone's doing.
It's everywhere. I think possibly also helped by the fact that looking at pictures of other people's bread is just a wonderful and wholesome activity. So whatever else people are doing in the privacy of their homes, at least they're posting pictures of the bread.
Right.
And I have zero cooking ability, zero baking ability. So I'm strictly living vicariously through the fresh baked bread of others. But I don't know. I don't want to like go to Bummerville too early, but
feel free to go to Bummerville.
I have been surprised. So I am very much a comic book person.
Yes.
And so part of that has been that, you know, for years we've all made jokes about losing track of what day it is, especially if you are in LA or in a freelance occupation where your schedule,
God forbid, both. Yeah.
everything changes all the time. The structure of your days can look wildly different month to month. And, you know, most of my life has been like that for a long time. But I am coming to understand sort of for the first time that, like, comics, for people in the audience who might not know this, comics generally come out on Wednesdays, have for the last couple decades, and new releases are currently on pause while we wait to find out anything about anything. And that means this Wednesday was the third Wednesday in a row without regular new comic book releases, and I am discovering what it is like to lose track of what day it is.
Yeah.
Like, I thought I had understood that feeling before, but the unmooring has become real for me in a way that I, like, you know, I feel bad for not appreciating how strange that has been for everyone for so long, because it didn't occur to me that I just had this pole around which the world revolved. That, you know, I might not know what other day it is, but I knew whether it was Wednesday.
Right.
So that's been a genuine surprise to me. Like, the other day, I think I checked what day it was every 30 minutes. Right. We are ordering a giant clock to go on the wall that actually says the day in large letters, because I don't know, just doing what we can. Like,
yeah.
That's been my surprise.
No, I mean, I think that's something that I think that's also been like a really interesting thing to watch play out for us all in the last month, because now, you know, and I'm just so fascinated. Oh, I am not doing a good job of, other than recording this podcast, I'm not doing a great job of sort of marking my feelings, journaling. I'm not writing long letters to friends. And I just listened to a conversation with the writer George Saunders, where he's reading a letter that he wrote to his Syracuse, you know, lit writing students, kind of saying, like, you know, and by the way, he is writing to people younger than me, so really, this is not my responsibility. But he, you know, he's like, you know, this is the time where artists and writers, in addition to, you know, people like journalists and just everyone, this is unprecedented. And as much as, you know, you might be trying to sort of like find a normal that feels comfortable, also know that it's going to be really, really important to have these personal accounts, large and small, about what this time was like, because it's unprecedented, at least, you know, in the last 100 years. And so I had that sort of awareness yesterday of like, I guess I haven't really been like, I haven't really been sort of recording history of my own in that way. And it made me feel a little bit like, oh yeah, maybe I should pay more attention. But I do feel like one of the things that has been coming up is that sort of sense of, okay, now it's been long enough that we are becoming aware that we will lose track of what day it is. And we are becoming aware of, oh, wait, like, I don't know. Some people really jumped on it right away and were like reaching out to old friends, or were checking in on all of their sort of like regular, you know, people they would see or talk to on a more regular basis. And I feel like I did not do that for the first like 2 to 3 weeks of this. I really was just like, oh, I don't know, I'm just taking it one day at a time. Like, who knows how long this will last? And at a certain point, I was like, you know, it's now been 3 weeks, and there are people I love dearly that neither one of us has bothered to be like, hey, how you holding up? Just because it's been so sort of like, well, maybe we won't need to do that. Or, you know, maybe there will be so much time to do that we're not in a rush. And now it really feels like, oh, I want to know how these people are doing, or I want to see their face, or I want them to send me just like a little voice message. If it's not going to be an hour long conversation on the phone, then, you know, just little bits and pieces. And I think those bits and pieces, I was just thinking this yesterday. I thought, you know, I think people are going to want to, and probably already are, like, define their days of the week in new ways that feel okay for them and feel maybe positive. Like, so I have been thinking, like, what do I want to do every Monday that's going to make Monday special?
Like, if it's not going to be, if it's not going to be a work thing, or if it's not going to be a, you know, appointment television thing, which is not really not a thing anymore for me anyway, then what can I bring to Monday that will make it feel significant and will mark time in a way that, you know, like I kind of have, you know, how do we make those days make sense and stand out and somehow, you know, is there a fun
we'll
new way
all need
to do
our
that?
Own themes like bars until we can have bars back. It's our personal Taco Tuesday or whatever.
Exactly. Seriously. Exactly. Like maybe for people who are baking bread, like they bake bread on Wednesdays and Sundays. And so already they have like two poles, tent poles to your point, where, you know, things get sort of built around that. Well, do I have the flour? Can I find the flour before my next, you know, bread baking thing? And, you know, am I gonna, what if I just, you know, what if the musicians out there are like, you know, Tuesday's gonna be the day that we all record like a new shitty song that we've just committed to do, even if it's bad, you know, like I think there are things we can do that that we just haven't done yet as a culture,
right?
Because this thing has not been going on very long yet,
and it's happening to like everyone is disrupted, but no two people's disruptions look the same. So if you have a family right now, I assume that the days of the week are intensely meaningful because you probably have five school schedules you're juggling, and I don't know how anyone is doing that.
I don't either. But even friends of mine that have kids are like, oh, no, it's still, like, there's still no, they still don't feel anchored the way that maybe you'd think that you would, you know?
Yeah,
moreless.
Yeah.
I think moreless is a terrific way of putting it, which you said earlier. do you have a large extended family? Do you have, like, do you have people, relatives and folks that you are staying in super regular touch with? Like, what is your family? What is your actual blood relation family structure look like right now?
It's very spread out. Not a huge extended family, but sort of it means like checking in on how things are, you know. My sister's in Washington, so obviously that was like the first wave of everything going on. And she, you know, I mean, happy to say so far so safe. Like, so it has involved my mom in one place and my dad in another and my stepbrothers and my sister and brother and sort of just reaching in different directions. And just trying to sort of find the balance of reasonable fear and worry for, you know, the folks who are in more urban environments and the folks who are in more rural environments where you don't want to freak them out, but you don't want them to under freak out because of the surroundings around them.
Yep.
That's been very, challenging as these things go, but, you know, luckily, so far, so good. There was a period where, at the beginning of this, my dad and stepmom were coming home from a trip, and I'm telling all of our business, but there was a brief but intense period where every child was intensely emailing because there was no way we could possibly get them home faster, but we somehow thought that that would happen we could just send more emails.
Sure. If you could displace the atoms of the universe just enough via email that suddenly time would work differently.
And, you know, I think they were sort of like, we love getting this many emails, but you realize time still works the same way.
Absolutely.
All's well, they got home safe. But
You don't have to. You don't have to like name who's where. I mean, you obviously also already mentioned your sister in Washington. But because everyone's scattered far and wide, do you feel like from a social experiment / like here's how different states are handling things? Like, are you getting kind of an interesting slice of life in terms of that, or is it more like, well, everyone's still on the West Coast? Or yeah.
I'm getting South Carolina, Texas, Washington, a different part of California, and some Northeast kind of like
there you go.
At different times and places. So
yeah, there
I have not been making like a wide chart, but it's also, you know, like one person's in a super tiny town and, you know, I'm in literally Los Angeles. So it's been very interesting sort of navigating all of those at once.
Yeah.
Trying to, I guess, see the silver lining of talking to people a lot, but it's a weird time. How are your family doing?
I have I have a large extended family on my mom's side, but they're not, I love them dearly, but they are not relatives that any of us are in like intensely regular touch with. I'm in touch with one of my aunts and uncles, one set very frequently, but and one cousin very frequently on that side, but everybody else is a little bit more of like, I hear from other people in my family that they're totally fine and good, and you know, they're in Hawaii or they're in, you know, the various places that they live. And then on my dad's side, I just have basically my dad, his sister, my aunt, and then her son, and that's it. And everybody is either in Arizona or where I am, so it feels like a pretty tight circle of like, you know, okay, well, I don't have to scan too far afield. But my sweetie's family is, you know, in Texas, and yeah, we've sort of been feeling the, like, we definitely feel that, and I don't know if you've felt it, but the sort of Texas resistance, like some of that stuff that you hear about or read about, you know, there's definitely a sense of, you know, them being like, well, I don't know if it's like, let's get this economy going again. Like, come on, everybody. So there's definitely that sort of reckoning of like, oh, yeah, remember how we thought for a second maybe this would be like a thing that kind of crossed partisan borders, and now somehow it's just reinforced everything in a totally new scary way.
Yeah, it is truly terrifying. I'm lucky because my dad is in Texas, but they are a bit north of Austin, so that was a sort of, I feel like, a community that probably because of the intensity of South by hitting, sort of reckoned with this kind of early, and because my dad is in a community for seniors, they're like, it's being taken seriously.
Yep, there you go.
So that's good.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Video games.
Video games.
Video games. You like them?
Maybe you wish you had more time for them.
Maybe you want to know the best ones to play.
Maybe you want to know what happens to Mario when he dies.
In that case, you should check out Triple Click. It's a brand new podcast about video games.
A podcast about video games? But I don't have time for that.
Sure you do. Once a week, kick back as three video game experts give you everything from critical takes on the hottest new releases,
to scoops, interviews, and explanations about how video games work,
to fascinating and sometimes weird stories about the games we love.
Triple Click is hosted by me, Kirk Hamilton.
Me, Jason Schreier.
And me, Maddie Myers.
You can find Triple Click wherever you get your podcasts and listen at MaximumFun.org.
Bye.
Where are you from originally? Where'd you grow up?
We moved around. Not as much as some people, but enough that I'm never sure how to answer that question.
Sure. How about this? Where were you a teenager? Were multiple or single places?
Okay, crucially, teens was when I moved from the big chunk in Sacramento, California, to the big chunk in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Okay. I like the way you said big chunk. I really saw capital B, capital C in my head. Like, it felt like maybe that was the name of the community that you're living in. Well, we went from Big Chunk, Cali, over to Big Chunk. You know, my dad worked for Big Chunk, so of course
they have an office in North Carolina.
Their North Carolina offices. At what age were you? Did you move from California to North Carolina?
15.
Ooh, ouch.
That was a time.
Yeah. Ay, ay, ay.
I ended up, I did 1 year of high school in California, 1 year in Chapel Hill, and then I went to, it's impossible to describe, a nerd boarding school. It was a public school, but we all lived there for the last 2 years of high school. So I went to three different high schools.
Okay.
So I'm very good at meeting new people.
I was going to say, you're either great at it or you're awful at it, because you learned so well how to be a total loner that you sort of go, I don't need, listen, if I'm going to meet these people, I know I can survive at least 6 months before it really happens. So
it's a little of both. It's still terrifying, but you just roll forward. I don't know.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, it sounds like when you went to the nerd boarding school, was that more of a like a less passive choice, in the sense that you were going to go to Chapel Hill, like it or not, but you had it? Was that a situation where you found out about the school, had the opportunity, and kind of chased it down?
I did. I guess I've never thought about that contrast before. But it certainly was a factor that it was sort of like a lot of kids applying for that school were like, I'm going to disrupt my entire childhood. And I was like, less of a big deal. not that I didn't love the people I had just met at the very excellent school I landed at in Chapel Hill. But I applied and got in and met lots of dear people.
Well, you said it in your preface that it's a pretty unusual. I don't know if I've heard of a high school age boarding school that is also a public school. So tell me more about it.
Okay, it is called the North Carolina School for Science and Mathematics.
Awesome.
It is the School of S&M. They went with that.
Great.
We were
great.
All intensely proud as high schoolers of that fact, with extremely sophisticated senses of humor.
That's right.
It was set up, I think, in the early 80s. I'm forgetting all my facts, but it's essentially like a public magnet school option where you go. It's in Durham, which if you've ever been to North Carolina is like 15 minutes from Chapel Hill. So I was not far from my new home.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time I went there, it was like 250 kids in junior year and 250 kids in senior year drawn from. And this is a thing, not to just nerd out on the structure of the school, but I love that they had a specific system, or at least they did when I was there, where they draw kids from every county in North Carolina, which meant that, you know, not every county in North Carolina has the same sort of baseline standards for school systems, but they all have a chance of, like, getting out to the magnet school.
Yeah.
Which made it, you know, it complicated for the teachers who were trying to handle the entire array of, but, you know, obviously all kids who had opted on some level into being there. I made a lot of really great memories of that school because it was a real mix of just hardcore, I love school, I'm excited to be here, and I have reasons to want to be away from my family as a teen, which meant I met a lot of really interesting, wonderful people that I would not otherwise have met. And, you know, folks who, being 1 year into my culture shock into the South, like, you know, people from all over North Carolina that introduced me to a ton of perspectives I didn't know yet. It's funny. It just hit me the other day when, not to go right back to Bummerville, but when John Prine passed away.
Yeah.
I had moved to, like, and, you know, we lived in the South when I was a tiny baby, but I didn't remember it at all. And so I was big snobby teen about coming back to the South as a 15-year-old.
From California? Are you kidding me? Absolutely. Yeah.
But I get there and I met so many wonderful kids at both of the schools I ended up at. And I remember a good friend that I made at the School of Science and Math, who was, not to put her on blast, but like a super classic soccer lesbian, of a wonderful type, and I was this, like, I hated anything that I thought remotely sounded like country music. And she introduced me to John Prine, who I realize is not exactly country music, but for me at that time, I will permanently associate his music with broadening my whole perspective on what the South could be like and what kind of people lived there and what they had to offer. And it's just this weird. So, yeah, lots of good memories and also lots of terrible decision making because I was not. It was running with the undiagnosed ADHD, so I got through that whole thing. But it was
well, that's a big
time.
Deal. I mean, to get in to a school like that, but also, you know, not necessarily be coming at it with whatever set of tools you're meant to have or assumed to have when you do something like that. How did you hear about the school? Was it something a teacher told you about? Was it something fellow students told you about?
Oh, I don't remember. Let's see. I had landed at, honestly, a very excellent school. I would have been fine staying there in Chapel Hill, which is a college town, so has, like, a lot to offer structurally. And I guess I just must have heard about it somewhere. This is such an own on Team Amy, but the slogan of the school was "Accept the Greater Challenge."
Mm-hmm.
Which was basically a dare as far as Teen Amy was concerned.
Right.
I was like, what, you think I can't leave my entire family and go to your boarding school?
Sure.
I'll show you. But Yeah, and it's a weird, like, just to explain the public thing, there was no tuition, but we all did sort of work service was the way that all kind of worked out. But, yeah, I don't remember how I heard about it.
What was the dorm structure like? Was it like girls one place and boys another place, or were they co-ed dorms? How did that work?
It was gender segregated, as we then understood gender to exist.
Yes.
Well, some people did. And so that was also an interesting feature of it, because the gay kids were doing way better.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, yeah, that always like tickles me when I think back on. But like my college had like segregated dorms and then had co-ed dorms, and I was so fascinated. It felt like a totally different campus going into a co-ed dorm. I didn't apply for any particular dorm my freshman year, and then I lived off campus after that. But it was like arbitrary assignments, and my best friend, who happened to be a dude, was in a co-ed dorm, and I really felt like I was at a different college altogether just walking into one building versus the other. It was crazy.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah, we had gendered dorms, and then this very interesting, at the time that I was there, their attempt to kind of, you know, because they had a lot of promises to keep to our various parents.
I bet.
So we had sort of like this weirdly structured evening where like you all had to go back like to your dorm between 8 and 8:30, I want to say, for like checking in with each other and doing dorm chores. Okay. And then like you were released again until I want to say 10:30 or 10. And at that point it was everybody in separate dorms. And at midnight, I think it was everybody in separate rooms. And there were various levels of discipline for being out of room. And the terrible telling on myself story about how I got through the school was that you would be in trouble if you were in another student's dorm room all night, but there did come a point where certain of the authorities stopped kicking me out of my friend's room because they were like, if she leaves, she will not do her homework, so we're just going to pretend we don't hear them laughing.
Right.
But yeah, it was this very strange combination of hyper-structured and then like accidentally forcing you to be irresponsible because you had to get all of your like play practice and other co-ed activities out of the way first and could then do your homework at midnight.
Oh,
because
wow.
It was like, they obviously didn't plan for that to happen,
right.
But that was sort of how it played out. Like, get everything else done. If you need to do any socializing, you got to do it now. And will we sleep? Maybe.
Right. And how, and so did, was it effective for them in the sense that it was not easy to buck the system and sneak out at 2 a.m? Like, did they have that pretty locked down successfully?
Here's the thing. I think that they had that locked down pretty successfully, but I wouldn't know because I was enough of a rule breaker to be in my friend's room all night. But if it was easy to sneak off campus and see someone, I would never find that out.
Gotcha.
Like,
gotcha.
Does that make sense?
It makes 1,000% sense. There's such a system of scales of like how much trouble you're willing to get into and like what feels within the scope of reason for a kid at any different age and any different level like that. So I totally get it. What was the, how did being there, if in any way, play into you dating, not dating, messing around, all that kind of stuff? Was that like, because I would imagine it'd be more pervasive, but not necessarily.
I couldn't much compare it because I was a, like, you know, slow starter. So had my first dating experiences, I was already there. I don't know how it, like, there is probably extra bad behavior because people were away from parents,
right.
If that made sense.
Yeah.
But also less bad behavior because any place on campus that you were was either technically someone's room or technically public space, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, it might have been, there was some level for the couples of sort of which were the most secluded spots, if any. There was some jockeying for like, oh, there's somebody there.
Right.
Yeah, that's.
what was the curriculum like there? Obviously, if it was focal to math and science, were, was the rest of the curriculum, was it still, I mean, you said play practice, right? So there's still sports, there's still fine art and performing art kind of stuff happening?
There was. That was, you know, I always do things in the most possible logical way. So I went to the science and math school and I did a lot of theater and choir. but it was honestly kind of what persuaded me to do it, because Teen Me couldn't figure out how she was ever going to choose just one thing. And so we went on a school visit and they had been doing Jesus Christ Superstar. And I was like, the science and math school is doing a rad production of Jesus Christ Superstar. I got to do this.
Yeah.
But academically, it was, or structurally, it was interesting because I'm trying to dredge these memories up, but the art stuff generally was not classes. We didn't have room in our schedules to take a drama class.
Okay.
So they were just sort of guided extracurriculars. I now understand it as familiar, but it seemed at the time I was like, ooh, it's so interesting that like the other nerds also love theater. And I'm like, actually, now I can see that those things pretty much go together. It happens a lot. But it was, so they had almost always had robust art stuff, but a lot of it tended to be sort of depending on the energy of students and like the structure. We had a faculty advisor for our drama program who was just absolutely wonderful, but that was sort of like a system they were changing and discovering year by year as they were trying to figure out how that worked, because none of us could or would make room in our schedules to actually take the arts classes, if that made sense.
Yeah.
Like, the literature class was great. I still had, like, a robust set of other academic stuff, but the art stuff was all out after the school day.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Where do comics start to come in, or had they already been a big part of your life by then?
They come in before the move. Interestingly, let me think. It's a journey for me of like X-Men the Animated Series and Batman the Animated Series and lots of Star Trek, and then like going to, so my first cons were California, like tiny hotel cons for visiting Star Trek actors and things like that.
Right.
Which was amazing. But that evolved into like watching Sailor Moon on TV and sort of spiraled into like going to a mall shop for Star Trek stuff and seeing comics and recognizing characters from the X-Men cartoon. And somehow that evolved into visits to a comic book store where I was reading a lot of manga and starting to read X-Men. And then this is not in any way a good story, sorry. But my first year in high school, I had like, but at some point during junior high, and then fully by the time I made this very good friend my freshman year in California, I had a buddy to talk about new comics with for the first time. And that was very well in place. I was playing in an email sim, which will not make sense to the people listening to this, but it, but now that people understand RPGs better,
yes,
maybe they can sort of reason backwards to just pen pal collaborative storytelling with a bunch of strangers.
Sure.
And so that was a, I think I, for a long time didn't realize, but like, well, I don't know. Once somebody asked me, who was sort of surprised that I'm into the things I'm into, but not in an insulting way, when someone was like, how did we not lose you? And I was talking, and I was like, I don't know, I was always going to be like this. And then when I mentioned moving across the country when I was 15, they were like, ah, there we go. Your new environment, like, you, it, all I had to bond with people or to hold on to was, like, these remaining connections to that pop culture stuff that meant so much to me.
Yeah.
And it really was, like, you know, in every new environment, I was absolutely the classic, like, find the kids who know Monty Python.
Mm-hmm.
Find the kids who are reading comics. That's how you'll know, like, that you can breathe. Yeah. On the other hand, it was probably just always going to be comics. I don't know. Was that answer coherent at all?
It was. It was. And by the way, if you are going to preface a story saying that it's not a good story, but then you talk about being in an email sim, I want you to know that you're doing yourself a disservice, because that's an inaccurate description of what is to come.
I played the future imaginary daughter of Hank McCoy and briefly loved, but still loved by me, Cecilia Reyes.
Oh my God,
it was all fine. I had to improvise a backstory with another character who had also decided that they had a shared parent. It's fine.
I think that's absolutely wonderful. And also, oh, by the way, yes, when you brought back up being a freshman in California, the person who's terrified of upsetting people in me was scared that when I said, like, oh, of course you were a snob going to the South from California, I don't want anyone to think that I'm saying because you should have been because the South sucks compared to California, but it is very much indoctrinated into a Californian, think, by the culture that's like, you're so lucky you live here and not the South, which is like so wrong because there's so many amazing places in the South that, you know, sort of go, wait, hold on, don't lump everything together. Like, this isn't fair, you know?
It's a rich tapestry, as they say, but it is, first of all, it's absolutely like what you believe if you're in that place and time. And like, I already had relatives down there, so I already knew sort of multiple sides of it. But the culture shock for me in that place and time was very real. Like, there, you know, the differences are also very real. At the time we were going there, the big comfort was at least North Carolina is sort of closer to what I would want compared to the rest of the South. And even that in the time since then has sort of been tear out your hairable. But like, that there are wonderful people down there, absolutely. But like, when you especially, I'm just gonna put the rest of Northern California on blast. We were raised to dislike a lot of places. I, for instance, was sure that Southern California sucked and I would never want to be there. And it turns out I love Los Angeles and have now been here longer than any other place in my life.
Exact
and child
same.
Me would die.
Exact same. Yeah. It's it never ceases. I continue to enjoy the disdain that was bred into me in my years in San Francisco about LA and like just how much
culture,
I did an
they
about
steal
face.
The water, they're
just a huge about face. Which what's beautiful about it, and we don't have to talk too much about this, but what's beautiful about it is that like none of what is people are disdainful about is wrong. Like it's like all of that stuff is real. But not unlike the South in some ways. Like, yeah, all the problems that you've used to, you know, with which to write off the entirety of Southern California, that is all there for sure. And then there's like the other 85% or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you can make that part your 100% if that's what you're into. But if you're moving down from Northern California and you loved Northern California, the chances are that that is going to, you know, encompass 5% of your chosen experience in Southern California. And the rest of it is going to be something that anybody living up there would probably think was quite wonderful. You know, but it really is. It's kind of amazing, like how it's just it's such a perfect example. And by the way, like, are there areas in Northern California where you're going to deal with like as racist a small community as like certain parts of the South? Most likely. But in terms of like what our experience, like sort of living in that beautiful liberal bubble, is just that sort of like, God, it's pretty fantastic how like open and welcoming and, you know, let's make the world a better place and let's all try to live and support each other and be, you know, be the first city in the United States to, you know, have gay marriage and all this kind of stuff. But then like where the walls come down about everywhere else is so intolerant. In fact, my friend Joe Klosik, when I just started getting interested in comedy at all in San Francisco when I was at SF State, he used to have this joke that was like such a beautiful in encapsulation, which I'm just going to say right now and probably not do justice. But he said something about like going into a bathroom stall in a bar and seeing something horrible, like, you know, God hates gay people, written on the wall in, you know, in the stall. And he's like, yeah, pretty horrible, right? But in San Francisco, we know how to handle that. And so someone else crossed all of that out and drew an arrow and said, you're the problem with, you know, God would never approve of you. You're the problem. You know, that's an absolutely horrible attitude. And that kind of thing doesn't play in Frisco. And then someone crossed that out and wrote an arrow and said, don't call it Frisco. I was like, that's it. That's it.
Those
that sort of like liberal in one intolerance is like so beautiful. It's so funny. Oh, boy. So was there, so with this kind of storytelling that you were doing with yourself and sort of as a fan, right, were there worlds that you were inventing that were based on nothing pre-existing, or were you sort of living in that space of, this is how I commune with this sort of art and pop culture that is meaningful to me?
That's a great question.
Oh, thank you very much.
Most of the engagement that I did was with established world stuff. Like, before I ever was doing my own play-by-email things, like, I was a guest at my big sister's very cool Star Trek sim that they did in a chat room.
Awesome.
Was the most nervous I've ever been. I'm trying to think. I was just, especially as a teen, I didn't see myself as someone who could make new things. I just wanted to consume everything that existed in the world.
Yep.
And so I was like, I'm halfway through Wheel of Time and I'm trying to make index cards for every character that appears on every page.
Right.
Spoiler alert, I did not succeed, but the internet was getting invented, so that got handled. And I'm trying to think, because what I've realized now is that there were, you know, things like, I was like, I'm not creative, but I did build an original character and put thousands of hours into blah, 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 blah.
Exactly.
You know, things that I didn't see at the time as legit creative projects that there were a surprising number of. Like, my little brother reminded me that we found this totally lost memory to me that he's like, no, we went to a garage sale and we got this thing and you made a LARP out of it in the backyard. And I was like, I did what? But as soon as he mentioned, it was like, it had jewels and there was a unicorn thing. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. So I guess it was generally always with the seed of an established world to play in. I think
that makes
sense.
Who
knows?
Though.
Maybe I'm going to find a lost desktop folder somewhere where I was doing my own thing.
You're like, what? I created a world as large as Lord of the Rings and I didn't even remember? I got to get this published stat. I think that's really interesting. And I think you've hit on something that is very relatable, which is this idea of the fear of creativity, or the fear of failure, the fear of somehow, like fancying yourself creative and being such a fan of other people's creativity and then not wanting to be put to the test, like, on a grand level, whereas you are being, like, wildly creative with a sense of permission because you feel like you're honoring something else that you respect within your creativity. So it's like this kind of interesting safety, right? It's like this permission to just enjoy it instead of being so hard on yourself about whether or not you're a creator or you are, you know, you're an inventor. I think that's so interesting. What's happened?
I've known for some time now that I sort of struggle with permission stuff, but it had never occurred to me that an excuse of, I can use the full range of my creative imagination on this because somebody else already invented D&D, like, and I'm, all I'm doing is, it's a compliment to them and I can just, like, has never occurred to me. And I'm definitely not having an experience with it. It's fine.
Listen, when I started a podcast, all I ever asked was, can I just be smug sometimes? All I wanted. I didn't want to help anyone. I didn't want to make people feel they were less alone or understood or feel connected or feel kindred. I just wanted opportunities to feel smug. And this is all. Thank you. What a gift. Thank you. No, I'm totally kidding. No, I feel like I'm coming up with, like, for me, what is so self-serving about the podcast is, like, it gives me, in some kind of weird way, I feel like I'm doing exactly what I just described, because I've never said that out loud before and I've never thought about it before. So that's a thing you and I just kind of came up with together in the context of this conversation, that I too am like, hey, wait a minute, what if? But then I put it out there like it was this thing that I was so wizened. Like, I was so...
No, but
like,
I mean...
Well, you know what I always say, never said it.
You just said, like, at the beginning of this conversation, you were like, I feel bad because I haven't been journaling the process of this, but I was just processing my own experience by listening to the excellent last episode of your podcast, where you guys were literally in real time processing what is happening. So you're also kind of maybe not realizing you're already doing the thing, is all I'm saying.
No, I think that's, and yeah. And I sort of allowed for, like, well, maybe once a week when I talk to someone else, like, I've sort of am having some kind of relationship with recording something, literally and figuratively. But yeah, no, I appreciate that. And that's really nice to hear, you know, because it's also that thing where you can overthink, like, what do people want right now? Do they want to hear about how everyone's doing? Do they want the escape? Do they want both? Do they not know what they want, like me, where I'm not even sure what I'm looking to get out of anything anymore? Like,
right.
You know, because things are so odd right now. And so, you know, I guess that if I had to come up with an ideal, it would be like, is there a way for us to exist in this space and look at those feelings and sort of, you know, laugh about what can be laughed about and cry what can be cried about, and then, but also take a little bit of a vacation into the past, you know, on some level,
yeah.
to hear about people's origin stories, as it were. What did your friend, so your friend makeup, did that kind of look, because you were in the smaller school where you were removed from going home every day to your family and stuff, that also, I guess, kind of removes you from, oh, but, you know, on the side, I was in this chess club that met on the other side of town, or, you know, those things. Like I sort of had friendships and relationships with people who were at different schools because, you know, you would meet somebody whose friend then went to that school, whose friend was then in a play at this school. And so it's right. A little different, I think, when you're sort of like, here we are on this planet that is our school.
It was very much this planet that is our school.
Yeah.
Almost no one was leaving campus for any reason. Like, I gave up dance because there was no practical way to, like, get off campus and go to dance classes and come back. And that had been always one of those, like, I think, like a lot of people, I've always walked in a bunch of different worlds at once, which can be very disorienting, but also, you know, you can learn from it because the assumptions of one place are never the assumptions of the other place. So at the tiny planet that was the school, weirdly, though, like, those structures just reproduced themselves inside the school. So you still had different non-intersecting groups of people that you interacted with,
yeah.
But it was like the play people and your science lab partners and the 100 million clubs that popped up on the campus because we were all just doing things in different combinations of each other. And there were sports teams. We had no football team, but we did have sports teams. We were the Unicorns.
Oh, that was my junior high. My junior high performing and fine arts sports teams were the Unicorns.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, I mean, I was not on any of those sports teams, but
nor was
for
I.
The people who were, like, it strongly conditioned their experience of the school. So I guess in that sense, you still had that same sense of, like, I am well known to this group of people, but a stranger to this group of people, and this other group of people thinks of me in a totally different way than group A. It was just happening smaller.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hey, podcast fan. We have a quick favor to ask. We'd like to get a better idea of who you are and what you care about. So if you have a couple moments to spare, go to MaximumFun.org/ad survey. There, we've got a short anonymous survey that won't take any more than 10 minutes to fill out. Plus, if you finish it, you'll get a 10% discount on our merch at the MaxFun store. MaxFun shows have always relied on support from our members and always will. The survey will help keep the few ads we do run relevant and interesting for you. Again, that's MaximumFun.org/ad survey, all one word. And thanks for your help.
Okay, listen, first of all, I want to get into this MASH game, and I think maybe this will be a fun way of sort of easing into it. I don't know, I'm saying that like it's a boiling hot pot of water that eventually will kill you.
We are the frog. Yes.
Yeah, we're just gonna dip a toe. But I'm so interested in that and what you just said, and I'm wondering if there's anything fun about our first category being like you can let's take you back in a little time travel bubble and you can like sort of alternate universe three areas of school that you really just did not like you don't really know what those kids' lives were like because they were passionate about this thing that you know wasn't necessarily something that played a huge role in your day-to-day there. How about three like other worlds of the school that you get to kind of go back and like live a little bit in the life of somebody whose compass was like pointed in a different direction in that same Ooh. On that same planet.
Okay. Oh, that's fascinating. Okay, let me see. There were somehow still a group of kids recognizable to all of us as the popular kids, and I honestly don't know what they did.
Right. Great start. Great start.
I don't know what they were listening to or spending their time on. Just no idea.
Yeah, love it.
And the second would probably be one of the sports teams. Like, I knew some folks who were doing, obviously, soccer and track and some of that stuff. But it was impossible to sort of combine with my extracurricular. So no idea what that would have affected the structure. And I think for the third one, I want to say it was this very interesting moment where they hadn't yet brought internet into our rooms, but people were cobbling together at different levels, different solutions, quasi-approved or not approved for sort of piping that around. And I know that there are probably a couple people who basically never left, like, the back of the boys' dorms that I probably never met. You know what I mean? And I just to sort of like if I were jumping into a different skin and a different experience of that,
yeah.
just to trade places with one of them to be like, what was your day to day like?
Okay, great.
I know a lot of it was sending people's moms to Costco for giant soda runs because we were all benefiting from that and just selling them out of your dorm room.
Oh my God, that's great.
But yeah, so that would be my third one.
Okay, beautiful.
Whatever, kid I never met from the back of the boys' dorm who never came out.
I love it. I love it. Okay, let's do next category. Got to get into some comic book stuff, graphic novel stuff. Let's do three worlds of like specifically printed comics that you would love to be able to jump into and like just interact with the characters.
Woof. Okay. First one's going to be Sandman. Sandman Universe.
Right.
Not a great chance that good things happen to you in it, but they will be so poignant.
That's right.
The second one, I'll switch companies, and it's just X-Men, whatever iteration. That might be good times, might be bad times. Yeah. You never know. And the third one, probably a common answer at this point, but just dipping a toe on into the world of Saga, the Image comic from Brian Vaughn and Fiona Staples that most people know, but that is just a super fascinating sci-fi fantasy universe that would be real fun to jet around in.
Okay. In a sci-fi fantasy universe, so this takes us away from just, you know, kind of comic books. Now we're expanding into, like, things that don't even exist yet, all that. What are three, like, qualities, superpowers, levels of intelligence, any kind of skill or thing that three different things that you would want to bring into any kind of sci-fi fantasy universe that you would be visiting?
I would be armed with these?
You yourself are armed with it.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. I mean, it is always tempting to go immediately for some kind of technopath skill set. It tends to be very broadly applicable.
Sure.
I think it'd be fun to pick something like, I have no idea how I would be wielding this skill set, but you said sci-fi fantasy, right?
Yeah.
So some kind of person who has like a good aura reading ability,
yes,
I think would be a really interesting one to go around with.
I love it.
Obviously, there's the good power, and then there's the sort of Cassandra, how does it go wrong kind of it
right,
all. But
right. I love that. I love that answer because it very much appeals to me as well. And I like that it's more generalized than like reading someone's thoughts or telling someone's future or seeing into someone's past. Like the idea right. that it's more about just the sort of like gut kind of wash of who that person is in terms of like their quality as a human or animal. I really like that because I don't want to know what someone's thinking, but I would love to be able to sort of read the room and go, I'm safe with this person. I'm not safe with this creature. This creature
is this wish
showing...
fulfillment because we are LA people now and we wish we could do this.
Probably. I mean, probably. great. Okay. Aura reading. Got it. Love it. What's your third?
And my third is just going to be like shapeshifting because yeah. why not?
I was so
why
hopeful.
Wouldn't you want that?
So hopeful from a living vicariously that shapeshifting would make it into this list. So I'm very glad.
Yay.
Okay. I'm going to take a hard right and go into the favored what foods are we going to allow you to have in this alternate universe that have zero ramifications on the environment, calories, allergies, sugar content, salt content. Ooh. It's all that all flies out the window and you can have three things in perpetuity, rare, doesn't matter, as much as you want without getting sick, and it's all good.
Oh, okay. Let's see. I'm going to go with... things I already eat all the time or things I don't?
Either one. Like, if you don't eat meat, because you know what I mean? Like that. But rest right. assured, in this alternate universe, meat isn't meat, but it just tastes exactly the same. So there's nothing wrong with eating. You know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff.
Oh, how fictional can I get with this?
Super
because
fictional.
I have a tragic flaw that I just... cheese is bad.
Yeah.
It tastes bad, and I don't get why people love it. And I wish that I loved it because it is in so many... delicious looking seeming foods, you know what I
yeah.
mean? Like nothing seems like it would be more delicious than a quesadilla or a grilled cheese sandwich
yeah.
and nothing in practice is as gross to me.
Interesting.
And I honestly I know I'm missing out. I know like for a fact.
Yeah.
So in this alternate universe cheese is delicious
wonderful.
And has a great texture.
Wonderful, wonderful.
And then my second one will be the contrast choice of the food that I should not live exclusively on, but absolutely could, which is Cheez-Its.
Great.
Fake cheese crackers are delicious and the best thing
Isn't
ever. And
funny?
While I realize they are not,
yeah.
God, that, I don't know, man.
Those
they don't taste like cheese.
So, yeah, they, I mean, yeah. For somebody who's a cheese lover, they feel like those things live enough next door to each other that like there should be a carryover. Does that apply? I say this as a person who enjoys cheese, not as much as some, but definitely does not like cheesecake. Whereas like I have friends who think they don't like cheese who love cheesecake. Where does cheesecake fall for you?
It's sort of okay, but
yeah.
not amazing and not terrible, if that makes sense.
It does.
The truth is, like, I have a decent tolerance for pizza cheese, and this has nothing to do with allergies or any other valid reason not to like something. Like, I can tolerate pizza cheese, I can do, how do you say caprese? Caprese?
Oh, sure, yeah, yeah.
Like, in, like, limited quantities,
yeah.
but I sort of, I hit a point where I'm like, no more.
Yeah.
Cheez-Its just aren't like that. I don't know.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Well, especially if there's a textural and consistency thing. Like, I think cheesecake, that's maybe the biggest problem for me is that I don't want a dessert that's like, like the roof sticking to the roof of your mouth kind of experience. Like, and so much of that is like textural. It's like the density of something and the way it moves in your mouth. So, you know, I
yeah.
totally get that. Okay, great. So Cheez-Its, and then what's your third one?
And my third one is going to be, I have a real soft spot for various holiday candies, and I know that they would lose their meaning if they were available every day of the year, but because this is fiction,
yes.
They don't lose any of their appeal, and you can eat them all the time, and that is fine from a health perspective.
Yes.
So, like, there's these little Christmas nougats. I don't know how to describe them, but they're little minty guys, and they come out around Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how far I drift from any traditions I was raised in, I will always want the Christmas candies.
Okay, so when you say Christmas nougats, I need to drill down into this. What? So are you telling me that like they are nougat? I think of nougat as being like nut paste related or like chewy nut. Is that what you're saying?
These things could be made out of chemicals purely for all I know. And not that everything is made out of chemicals.
But they're not chocolatey.
No,
and they're not minty.
Well, they're minty in flavor.
Oh, okay. Is it those saltwater taffy kind of ones where there's like maybe like a somehow there's like a drizzly Christmas shape inside, like a loose looking
like a little tree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Little stripes around the outside.
Yeah.
They're not exactly saltwater taffy, but they have a chewy consistency like that.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I definitely know what they are. That's what I was imagining, but then I couldn't apply the word nougat as I understand it to those candies.
Somehow the company Brock's will go out of business someday, and someday they will stop existing or being available, and I will literally spend the rest of my life wishing that I would stumble upon a cache of them. It's like I have already projected forward the despair I am going to experience when that happens.
Yeah, you already missed them. I love it. Okay, next category, let's do some romance. These can be people living or dead from any era, any age. They can be animals. They can be comic book characters. They can be literary characters. Ooh, it's the sky's the limit. You know what? They can be out beyond the sky. Beyond the sky.
So many choices. Let's see. Fictional character Hank McCoy, a.k.a. the Beast.
Right.
Actual historical person Jane Austen.
Great.
And any male character drawn by illustrator Kevin Wada. Is that a valid answer?
It's an amazing answer.
Okay.
Okay, next category, let us do, let's do three musicals. And I'm not saying they have to be on Broadway. They could be like at like some random hole in the wall in Paris. I don't care. But three musicals that heretofore, to your knowledge, do not exist about some sort of pre-existing pop culture thing that you enjoy. So it could be, you know, it could be a comic book universe that is depicted in musicals, but it could also be like, I love Pop Rocks and I want to see Pop Rocks the musical. Like just sort of a pop culture thing that you love that you get to see turned into a musical of some kind.
Okay. Legit real answer. I want to see a musical of The Tale of Genji, the Japanese story.
Great.
Because they use poems to impress people, and I think the best way you could communicate that would be to write really amazing songs, because the power and aesthetic appeal of them needs to communicate super clearly to the audience.
Beautiful.
And then I'm trying to sort out the ones that I've tucked away where I'm like, someday I should learn to make things and do that one. But I could just use them now. There is a lady who worked with, Michel de Montaigne, the French guy who invented essays.
Wow, great.
Whatever, I'm telling it now because it's not like I'm going to magically learn to make things tomorrow. But he was in his like 50s and he was a super famous, important like thinker who was like, his works were off influencing Shakespeare and everybody else. And there was this girl in her early 20s in Paris who wrote him a fan letter. And that fan letter was so good that basically they became best friends. He made her the executor and the final editor of all of his works.
Wow.
And, like, she wrote a book and named it after him and spent the rest of her life as a professional writer. And that's somehow not already a musical?
Yeah. That's amazing.
And I needed to exist.
Also, by the way, like, if you putting it out into the world gives a sense of, like, even mild temporary uneasiness of, like, well, now I've given this idea to someone else, also feel free to use that to just like catapult yourself into like scrawling something down and then just, you know, see if you feel like working on it the next day too. Do you know what I mean? Like you could totally use this as a, I am the one that put this out in the world and I am going to claim it and I'm taking it. And I'm working on it right now. Everyone.
For the massive audience of people who are waiting for that, set in an era that isn't even one of my specialties.
I'm ready, willing, and able to watch that musical. I'm excited about it. What's your third one?
And the third one would have to be some truly wild nonsense. A musical told entirely from the perspective of a star that is seeing vague impressions of the Earth that somehow attempts to tell the entire history and development of the planet from the perspective of someone a few light years away who doesn't understand how life works.
Couldn't love it more. Could not that's love that idea one. More. Yeah, that's the Paris one. Weirdly, the Paris one, they're like, we don't need to hear about Michel Montaigne. Like, that's too close.
We already know.
Too close. Let someone else do that. Amazing. Okay. Second to last category, let's do three places. You have a door in your house that allows you to teleport magically, safely, and without worrying about social distancing to three places that exist now in the world.
The inside of a closed major museum.
Awesome.
This might be because I've been watching Monterey Bay Aquarium on Twitch. They're running around in Animal Crossing, and it's just reminding me of all of these wonderful spaces.
Oh, I need to be looking in on that stat.
Oh, my God. It's so good. They had Emily Grassley as a guest, and they were looking at all the fossils and the animals and just telling people facts. And the Twitch chat was, they were like, should we switch to the aquarium region? And the chat's going, fish time! It's the best.
That's awesome.
So space number two, if I could go anywhere right now. Look, no idea how the weather is right now, but just popping into Yosemite. I don't know.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, exactly what I was thinking. Like, I was having a little fantasy while I was waiting for you of like, God, don't you want to just be inside Yosemite right now to see like what the animals are up to and what is happening? And that is so awesome. I love that we were just thinking the same thing.
We would run into each other and be like, how?
Yeah. Oh, you got the door? Oh, you got the door too? Nice.
It's not just for, like, the museum thing is definitely for the have it to myself of it all.
Yes.
But the park is more just like, I would like to see it. I would.
Yes.
Yeah. And the third one, probably Tokyo.
Great.
You never regret anything that, like, looking around. Not like I've spent a lot of time there, but it you know, I'm that kid, obviously. You can tell from my teenage stories.
For sure. And also agreed. I mean, I've only been there once and I definitely was like, yep. There has not been a day in any area of Tokyo that I haven't been like, I'm so glad I came here. And whether it's close to who I am or what I understand or am into or not, like, equal value, you know?
It's the he who is tired of London is tired of life, I think turns out to be true for pretty much most enormous gatherings of people.
Yeah, very true, very true. Okay, great. Final category. Oof. Oh, Amy, I don't want to let you down. Is there anything that you can think of that you're like, I've been dying for someone to ask me to list three of this thing or like express three of these things? Because I don't want to, like, I'm very terrified of like a milquetoast final category.
Goodness. No, nothing I can think of.
How about just like real life, basic, simple skills that you know,
so what are
those? Isn't like you speak every language, like just kind of like even because we've done some sort of like really pie in the sky fun stuff here.
Sure.
But what about, yeah, just like three basic things where you're like, I would just
look,
love
there's no question that I can't make way more serious than it needs to be. That's right. An unfortunate superpower, but I got it. Did you want a detailed answer? Because that's what we're here for. Ordinary skills I wish I had. I mean, clearly, brevity would be up there.
Hell no. I refuse to write that down.
Let's see. I mean, the two real answers, time management.
Great.
See above read. Giant clock with the day of the week on the wall. We're working on it. And the ordinary... Oh, cooking. Obviously, cooking.
Great.
I mean, not that I'm not saying it's an ordinary skill, amazing chefs of the world, but I also don't have the ordinary level of skill at it. So, and then... You know what? For like, I was a dancer, but being not at all a sports kid, the like, I've had a chance in adulthood to sort of grow to appreciate this. Again, really long version of this answer.
I love it.
But like, my friends with the fitness skills,
yes.
The like knowing how to work out, like watching my buddy Erica Ishii doing amazing improvised handstand exercises in her apartment. And it's, you know, it's not simple in the fact that she hasn't worked super hard to acquire those skills.
Right.
But I think they're really cool.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I don't,
for sure.
I think I underestimated as a teen that like that is a real valuable thing to be good at. As like a geek who was like, why would you sports? It's right. Like, oh, actually, there was a lot of good stuff going on there. I just didn't know about it.
Yes, I completely agree. And I think every answer you've given will be taken in the spirit in which it was intended. I that's all because everyone knows the difference between you saying you wish you had good fitness skills and you wish you could fly. Like, we all know sort of like where we've set the boundaries on this.
I mean, both, really. But yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so why don't you give me a number between 1 and 7?
3.
And then while I'm doing my very rudimentary calculations, if you could take these moments, if you don't want to, that's fine, because we can just edit this out. But just to tell people where they can find you, what you're excited about, anything you're working on, anything that you're a fan of right now that they should check out, just, you know, that kind of general stuff.
Excellent. Yes. Let's see. You can find me basically all over the internet at EnthusiAmy. That's like enthusiast, but my name on the end. And I do a lot of different stuff in the sort of professional nerd adjacent space. Right now, I have been working for some time now with DC Comics on a show we call DC Daily. We do it for the streaming service where you can read a ton of comics and watch a bunch of content and then watch our shows where we talk about the stuff we love. And you can always watch the new ones free, but right now they're also putting them up on YouTube while we're making them from home. So they're easier than they've ever been to watch. The service is US only, unfortunately, but we've been having a really great time, and my co-hosts are awesome. And it is, I'm going to segue from that into, it's a kind of a weird, scary time for everyone in the universe, but comics being part of that everyone is dealing with a lot of uncertainty right now. So there have been some really fabulous charity things going on that go to the Book Industry Charitable Foundation, which helps indie bookstores and comic book stores in times of disaster. So I'm not sure where we will be with the different charity initiatives, but there's one called Creators for Comics that my buddy Sam Humphreys is part of the team that's been running, that's truly incredible. There is Jim Lee, who is the publisher of DC and a obviously well-known comic book artist, has been doing custom charity sketches.
Awesome.
I have been super moved by a bunch of that stuff. I do my own Twitch streams where we play a mix of new and old games, and we have a book club where we read books and comics and we have a real good time. So that has been really nice.
I get in on some
going.
Of that. What am I doing?
Oh, please do.
Why haven't I tried to muscle my way into any of that? Okay, great.
Oh, please come to book club. And let's see. And then you can usually find me rolling dice somewhere in the various RPG spaces, or making silly comedy or music stuff with buds like my friends from the Double Clicks. And yeah, just so all of that, I guess.
Awesome. 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 That was ample time for me to come up with some, I think, very pleasing results.
Oh, good.
I am just sort of looking to see where I want to begin. Well, let me combine basic and complex for a moment and say that while in just kind of regular life, you have this sort of relationship to your own physique, fluidity, fitness skill, hand-eye coordination. You have just a fantastic grasp on your own fitness and your relationship to your body and flexibility.
Yes.
And stuff.
Yes!
So that's sort of how it manifests in this reality. But when you go into a fantasy / sci-fi environment, any of them out there, that translates into full-on shape-shifting.
Yes!
Which is fucking awesome.
That's
so
good.
Well done on that. That can include you going into the Saga world.
Oh!
So that's on the table.
Good.
Yeah, that's coming up. You also have done just some wonderful, wonderful work putting this out there into the world for everyone to enjoy. That obscure Parisian musical about
yes.
the Earth told from the perspective of a star from just light years away is like equal parts esoteric and just like timeless. So very, very excited to check that out with my own eyeballs. I want to congratulate you for your vacation home that I have now inserted into the city of Tokyo that you can teleport to
Ooh.
At will through this door in your existing home.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I want to congratulate you for your romantic relationship. And this is very much like you wished for more wishes and you got them. Mm-hmm. Because basically I've now given you a relationship with any male character of Mr. Wada's. So you could just be flitting all over.
I did wish for more
wishes. Listen, a shapeshifter has different needs. Do you know what I'm saying?
Maybe we're two shapeshifters, and maybe you're both all shapeshifters. They can turn into is characters illustrated by Kevin Wada.
Hit the nail on the head. That is 1,000% what this is. You're right. I just didn't interpret it correctly, but that is exactly what it is. And furthermore, I want you to rest assured. I know you see this dark time in the future where these very special Christmas mint nougats are unavailable. Not in this universe. Mm-mm.
Yes.
No. In perpetuity, forever. You can just, whatever part of that brain is mourning that time, let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's never coming. It's never coming. Yeah. As much as you want, whenever you want, for how long? Endless. So that is your MASH future. Oh, I forgot one important thing, which is that if within all of this stuff, you're still feeling like, I just need one more adventure, like maybe something from my past, maybe a window into something that I just didn't get a chance to experience on my the planet of my school. You're going to see what those popular kids are up to.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yep. You're going to dive right into
that. I will attempt to get them
that.
To listen to the weird Parisian musical, and it will not go well.
It will go very poorly. It will go very poorly. And I can't wait. I can't wait. Amy, thank you so much for making this a very special Thursday for me.
Oh gosh.
Thursday was Amy Dallenday today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a pleasure.
I am so glad that it worked out, and this feels like it's been such a no-brainer for a long time coming, but I do want to give a shout out to our mutual fan and pal Pierre Jerome, who is a phenomenal mind in his own right, who is in the Bay Area, who is French Canadian, who helps me with all of my French Canadian pronunciations when I get things wrong. And who quite some time ago said, why have you not had Amy on the podcast? And I said, I'm going to. And then he brought it up once more time recently, and I was like, yeah, what's wrong with me? What am I doing? Why have I not facilitated
thank you.
This?
So
this episode is dedicated to a very, very smart, mathematically inclined, creative Amy fan, Legend of Korra fan, and all around good human being. So this will be
what
fun,
a good human
fun for him. And actually, I should say, he's the only one who's allowed to listen to this episode. So if you are a listener of the podcast or a fan of Amy's and you've come to listen to this, please forget everything you've just heard. This is an exclusive for one person podcast episode. I should have said at the beginning. I'm sorry, everybody.
Quick update.
That's right. That's right. I hope to see you in one of your other many adventures that you are having online and beyond. I would love to horn in on that. And
we're all very like, there is no beyond anymore.
That's right.
So
that's
those
right.
of us there who already lived this. On the internet are the only ones. We have to bring everyone else with us.
That's
somehow.
Right. Here I come. I'm packing up. Thank you again, Amy, and everybody else. I'll talk to you next time on the podcast.
Thanks so much.
The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.